Welcome to the Kona Edge, where you'll discover what the best triathletes in the world do to give them the edge.
Welcome on to yet another edition of the Kona Edge. Thanks for taking the time to download and listen to this podcast. We've been getting some incredible reviews on iTunes. Keep them coming. I love hearing from triathletes all around the world. And don't forget, as you heard, there is a fabulous prize up for grabs. We're giving away an entry to an Ironman race anywhere in the world. If you want to find out more about it, that website to get to, okay, is thekonaedge.com/win. That's where you can get all the details. One thing I love about what I do here on the Kona Edge is I get to chat to so many different athletes from different backgrounds. And today's is very different. And I think a lot of people are going to resonate with this because there's many, many athletes out there who are training for Kona who don't have normal, regular, run-of-the-mill 8-to-5 jobs. And our next guest is one of them. And she's doing some amazing things. And it's a great pleasure to welcome all the way from Oxfordshire in the United Kingdom, Rachel Hallam, who's a sheep farmer, joining us on this edition of the podcast. Well, we head to Oxfordshire now, and in the UK, it's the first time I've ever spoken to a sheep farmer on the Kona Edge, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Rachel Hallam on. Rachel, welcome. Nice to have you.
Hey, Brad. Yeah, thanks for talking to me. Good to hear you too.
Rachel, we chat to, it's amazing. A lot of the age groupers that I chat to have like a sports science background, or they're coaching, and that's how they fund their triathlon addiction. You're a sheep farmer. There can't be too many age groupers racing at the level you're racing at who are sheep farmers.
Probably not, Brad, no, to be fair. Yeah, a little different. I do get a few frowns when I say what my job is.
I think that's why I love doing what I'm doing, Rachel, is I just get to chat to so many different types of people, and there's no magic formula. I'm starting to learn that, you know what, you have to do this outside of triathlon if you want to race and qualify for Kona. It's the habits. It's not necessarily the way you fund the triathlon that counts.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's all about mindset, really. I think if you want something badly enough, you do whatever it takes around work and family, etc., to do the hard yards, really. It's, yeah.
Rachel, let's take a step back and look at where it all started for you from a triathlon perspective. Have you always been pretty sporty? Were you sporty growing up? What did you enjoy doing?
Yeah, obviously living on the farm, we've always been an outdoorsy type, and always been involved with sport. My father's a big sports fan, but a rugby cricket man, really, to be fair. So I actually started my sporting life sort of playing team sports, sort of rugby, hockey, those sort of things. Always run around the farm chasing sheep. You know, my rugby training was tackling sheep on the farm. It was back in the day. But I've always done a lot of running. We never went on holidays as children, so my dad built us a 10-meter swimming pool in the back garden, so I've always swum a little bit. Me and my brother used to do little triathlons around the farm, so we'd set up the pool, do the little swim in the pool, grab the mountain bikes, go for a little jaunt around the farm, and then head off on a little run. So yeah, as a kid, we've sort of always really been active, really.
When did the triathlon, or the formalization of triathlon, come into being for you?
I guess that started at my end of sort of university days. I'd been playing rugby quite seriously up until that point, sort of played sort of high standard, and then I sort of got a little bit disillusioned with it, I guess, and so I just ended up doing a lot of running, really. And then entered a charity triathlon and didn't look back, really. Joined the local tri club, Oxford Tri here, and yeah, loved it from ever since then, really.
Rachel, triathlon in the UK has really exploded, I don't want to say in the last couple of years. It's been a while now where it's been on a really steady growth curve. What do you reckon's the cause of that?
It's a good question, you know, Brad, actually, to be fair. It's sort of, I guess it's cycling and triathlon are almost seen as like the new goal for a lot of city slickers and that sort of thing. But then also you've got the people who just want to get out there and have fun and enjoy it. And there's so much to be gained from triathlon. I think it's not just, you know, not just you're talking about your elites. You're talking about anyone can just pick up a bike and go for a ride, jump in the lake, go for a swim and running. It's accessible, really. And it's a good challenge.
Did you mentioned you played rugby fairly competitively and at a good level. You had a brother on a farm. I can imagine it was very competitive growing up.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. We used to play cricket in the back garden, you know, breaking a few windows in mum's house. And, yeah, there's always a competitive edge there with my brother and I.
Do you hate losing?
Absolutely. Yeah, as my brother will tell you.
Has he taken up triathlon at all?
He does a lot of running, actually. He lives
Does
in
he?
New Zealand these days. He's a
Okay.
vet out in New Zealand, so he does a lot of outdoor activity and stuff there. But he's a lanky sort of runner, really. He's loves it.
Are you still better than him?
Of course,
I love it. Let's talk about when you decided to start taking this sport seriously. I mean, three sports, it's not easy to juggle. We mentioned the farming, and I want to touch on that quite extensively too, because that's one thing where people really struggle is the time management side of things. But when you
Absolutely.
started taking it seriously, did you sort of harbor ambitions of going as far as you have in the sport?
Well, being a competitive person, I always want to push myself to be the best I can be. So, yeah, I guess you're always aspiring to be better than you are at the moment. And obviously, with Kona being one of the ultimates, that's a driver, really. My competitiveness always seems to come out, even in training and things like that. It's sort of, yeah. It's...
Where was that seed first planted, Rachel? I mean, Kona, it's a long way from the sheep farm.
Very much so. No, even when I started triathlon about 8 years ago, I vowed I'd probably never do an Ironman. But no, it was, recently, in recent times, I've got to know quite a few people who have been more involved with Ironman or been inspired by them, really, I guess. And I was like, if they can do it, why can't I? And it's sort of, this is the challenge, I guess, now. It's...
Can you remember the thought process deciding to do your first Ironman? Because it doesn't matter where you go around the world, if you run a marathon, people think you're amazing. Now all of a sudden you're running a marathon on the back of a 180k bike and a 3.8 kilometer swim. It's a huge thing. Can you remember the thought process that you had to like convince yourself that you actually want to do this thing?
I guess it was a couple of years ago when I was following the world champs. I was like, follow it on, I guess, on live stream and so forth over here and the internet, and I was like, God, yeah, I can do that. Let's plan and try and do it. So it was, a couple of years ago, really, when I first thought about doing it.
What was the first one you entered?
Bolton last year.
And your experience in the build up to it, was it for as a novice? I think often we underestimate how tough it's actually going to be.
Absolutely, I was daunted. I'm not going to lie, I was daunted, and I think that was a good thing, because then if you are scared, you don't go so hard as and blow up on the bike, which I think a lot of people draw positives from that and have a good first outing, I think, in an Ironman, because they are a little bit daunted and then hold back a little, I think.
Was that your experience?
Yeah, literally. I knew I'd have a strong swim, so I was like, right, put some effort in the swim and go pretty hard for that, and then just hold back a bit on the bike and try and get to the end of the bike thinking, yeah, you could do another 10 miles or so and still easily be comfortable coming off the bike was my mantra, really, I guess, I had in my head to hold back.
That first one's quite a toughie from a mental perspective, particularly when you get off the bike, because you're tired and you're fatigued.
Absolutely.
Even though you feel like you can go further, and then you've got to try and wrap your head around running 26 miles off the back end of that. How did you feel when you got off the bike in your first
That's
one?
Just it. My transitions were terrible. I sat there trying to contemplating what I've got ahead of me. It was like being used to doing sprint Olympic transitions. It was like sitting there for a while, putting my socks and shoes on, thinking, right, come on, you're going to go do a marathon now.
Have a bit of a picnic in T2.
Yeah, literally.
I love it. My times are exactly the same, Rachel. My brother still takes the mickey out of me. He's like, what did you do in there? What took so long?
I know, my husband was the same. He shouted at me, where have you been? What have you been doing? As I ran out the tent.
Let's talk about getting the balance right from a work perspective. I chat to many age groupers who work in this industry. So they might be coaching to fund it or they're in sports science. So it's very in line with the sport itself. Yours is very different. As a sheep farmer, it's not like you also are off on set hours, so you can clock in at 8 o'clock, clock out at 5 and do what you need to do around there. How do you get that balance right? Because it must be tough.
Absolutely. At the end of the day, if you want something badly enough, you make the time for it and you plan your time accordingly. I've got a good relationship with my coach, Mark, Mark Liberty from Exhale. And we sort of, I guess, we work together and we plan our week and so forth. And then I also have a good relationship with my dad, who I guess is my boss on the farm, so to speak. And we just, when I've got a window, I make sure I use that window. So if I've got a couple of hours, I'll make sure I'm efficient with my time. If it means getting on the turbo, that's more efficient time-wise, I'll do that instead of faffing around trying to get out for a long ride or so forth. It's just basically utilising the time available. And even if that means like doing lambing or what have you, when I'm on a night shift, if I've got a quiet period, I'll get on the turbo for an hour or so, but middle of the night, but needs must.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting you say that, sneaking them in sort of where you can. I'm taking it that most of your training you do on your own because your work environment's not aligned with guys and girls who have 8-to-5s, if that makes any
That's
sense.
That's right. I think you'd be very driven. I know obviously a lot of athletes do train on their own, but some people take heart from training with a group. But I'm a driven person, so I don't lack the motivation to get up at 4 or 5 o'clock to go training. That's never been an issue. So I think that helps sort of my mentality, really.
Do you sometimes wish that you did have that you could go out at 4 o'clock in the morning when the alarm goes off and it's cold and possibly raining out and you go, you know what, I really don't feel like doing this, but knowing that there might be 4 or 5 people waiting for you, do you sometimes wish you had that?
No, because I've got that. I think I've got that in a drive that sort of like if I miss a session or because I turn around and roll over and press the snooze or so forth, it's there in the back of my mind. It's sort of hanging over me. I don't need that sort of that external motivation from others. I think I'm driven enough, and I guess I'm lucky in that sense that I am driven enough by sort of my goals within the sport. So, yeah.
I'm guessing and I'm presuming here what you do for a living too is pretty physical. It's not a case of you pushing papers behind a desk. How do you deal with that, Rachel? I mean, you're putting in tough sessions in training on the bike, on the run, or in the pool. And then you need to. There's no real time to relax and recover from those.
No, it's making the use of when I can relax and recover to do that, and it's fueling correctly as well. I guess I eat like a horse. I'm there a couple of hours without eating because I'm obviously on my feet a lot of the time and doing physical work. It's sort of especially like lambing period, shearing sheep last couple of weeks and what have you. That's been pretty crazy, but we sort of build it in. It's functional strength training, really. It's part of the training, I guess, and makes me strong.
I'm having a good giggle. Functional strength training. I've never heard shearing a sheep as functional strength training, but I quite like it. It might be the new big thing.
You should come and give a go, Brad. I'll tell you what, I'll have you swimming strong. That's for sure.
Let's give us a normal day in the life of Rachel Hamm, like on the farm, from a training perspective and a work perspective. What do you go through in a day?
Normal. What's normal? Okay. Normally it depends on the time of year. Very much so. It's sort of, we have obviously busier times of year than others. So sort of at the moment it's sort of just coming out of the most busy period. So I'll be up crack of dawn walking around the sheep. We have to check around the sheep every day, twice a day, just make sure they're sort of healthy and so forth, and make sure that because they're bringing up the lambs at the moment, so we have to check everything's okay. And then I'll try and get in the pool for sort of 6 o'clock if I can. A lot of the weekday mornings I'll try and get an early swim in. Come home, have some breakfast, then go and do the day's jobs, really, depending on what needs doing. And then, again, it really is very much every day is very different. So you sort of almost have to think on your feet. It's right, if I've got a window now, I'll go and get some training in, or I'll go, or that jobs need doing, so I'll get those jobs done and then train in the evening. So it's, yeah. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah, it's incredible to me, Rachel. Do you get in a situation like this? One of the things that I've picked up with many of the age groupers that I chat to is many of them are busy and they're successful in whatever they do for a living, and they really need to plan their lives and look at a week and go, okay, this is where I can train, I can do it. Are you, even though you are on the farm and you are working, can you plan your day to day a week in advance, or is it a case of, you know what, all of a sudden it's quiet for an hour, I need to hop on the trainer and it's now?
Literally that, Brad. It's usually day to day. It's sort of because if something comes up on the farm, there's like a crisis or something on the farm, or we've got something that desperately needs doing, I sort of have to drop everything and the farm has to take the priority, really. The animals they have to be looked after.
That is phenomenal. Rachel, you also mentioned you're coming from a farm perspective, you're coming out of one of your busier periods, or the busiest periods of the year. You've also just come off a race, so you're not only busy work wise but you're racing at the same time.
Yeah, I guess I'm not really race fit as yet, but I'm fit enough, as you say. Yeah, so we did Lanzarote a couple of weeks ago, so that was good. Yeah, I enjoyed that.
Let's talk about that performance. You enjoyed it. You had a pretty decent day out, didn't you?
To be fair, I can't complain, really. I won the age group race overall for the women, so I was pretty stoked with that. I think coach was happy too, so we can't complain, really.
It's incredible. I'm just blown away by what you do for a living and how you manage to train and keep all the balls in the air, so to speak. But let's talk about your actual sort of Kona experience. And like, yeah, I said, I mean, Kona's a million miles from what you do day to day. It must be a very different experience, and something that I don't want to say it's way out there, but it must, yeah, be a really nice sort of release, absolutely, for you to get away from everything in a place like that.
Yeah, it is rather. So I'm lucky. So my parents are sort of were able to cover the farm at that sort of time of year. It's usually our quietest time. So it was, yeah, it was pretty exciting. Really going on a plane. We don't go on holiday that often. So it was a massive trip around the world. Here we come. Yeah, and then got to Kona. It was like, wow, this is a bit different. Initially, it was obviously very hot and so forth. We weren't really used to that coming from British climate. But yeah, it was almost very surreal, I guess. Sort of, I guess, obviously, people have been to Kona realise you're almost in a bit of a bubble, really. And I guess I sometimes think I maybe got a little bit overawed by that this year when I went out there as well, because it was so different to what I'm used to. And yeah. It's an interesting one, that's for sure.
It's quite nice they put it in October when things are quite, yes, quiet on the farm.
It's perfect for me in that sense. Yeah, I've just got to work harder at some other times of the year to try and get the qualification for it, really. But
The climate must be an interesting one, because it's, yeah, funny, a lot of the age groups that I chat to from the UK, it's something that they do struggle with. You raced in, yeah, Lanzarote this year, which is a bit warmer than possibly, that's Bolton, right, or Wales, and conditions probably more aligned to what you would experience in Kona. Are there certain things that you do to sort of get yourself ready? And is there a way, yeah, to get yourself ready and prepared physically for what awaits on the Big Island?
Yeah, good question. That was one of the intentions and reasons for doing Lanzarote, actually, was to have a sort of try and get a race that's sort of near enough, well, similar kind of conditions, windy, hot and humid, a little bit more than we're used to over here, because I think the conditions really did take their toll on me last year. So that was one of the reasons for trying to do Lanza. I also went out for a few days. I had a long weekend in Lanza beforehand, which was quite handy to, a bit more acclimatisation.
As far as racing last year in Kona, yep, you had qualified, you did what you needed to do to get there. Was it a rude awakening being on that island? I mean, you've obviously had spoken to people who had raced before. Mark, who, yeah, we've chatted to on the Kona, yeah, Edge before, he's got experience of being there. He must have told you what it was like. But can you prepare yourself before you actually get there? Or is it a case of once you get there, you go, oi, hang on a sec, I wasn't expecting this?
Yeah, you know, That's what I'm saying. I think I didn't prepare well enough last year as far as sort of mentally what to expect out there, and also the conditions, really. I think I need, the more people, what you read different sort of thoughts on the process. I guess people sitting in their bathrooms with the taps running, doing turbo trainer sessions and that to acclimatise to the heat, or going to heat chambers and doing it that way. I think you've got to get out there early as well. I think that's one thing I definitely learned. You need to get out there sort of 10 days or so, 8 to 10 days, depending how you cope with travel and stuff, to get out there and experience some training, hard training out there at the same time.
Is that, I mean, are you doing that differently this year compared to last year? Is that what the plan is for 2016?
Yeah, I think I'll know what to expect this year, which is good, because obviously first time you go, it's like, well, it either goes one way or the other. I think you either have a good race or you completely melt down. I know what to expect. I know how to better how to prepare myself. I spoke to various people and what they've done, and just taking snippets, I think. And yeah, we'll have a better frame of mind this year, I think.
Let's talk about arriving on the Big Island for the, yep, first time. And that's yep, something that I also pick up from a lot of athletes, that it's almost overwhelming. You look, yep, around and it's just these cut bodies and racing snakes. Literally, wherever you, yeah, look. Did you find, I mean, you're obviously pretty good at what you do, but were you intimidated when you arrived on the Big Island?
You can't help not be intimidated. I think as a competitive person myself, I sort of look at other people and think, she looks fast and fit or what have you. But then at the end of the day, also, you read articles saying that people who are sort of lean and super skinny don't race well in places like Kona. So you have to take that on board and look at yourself and draw positives on what you've done so far in the season, your training and how successful you've been to get there. So you are one of these people. You've earned the right to be a part of it. So you shouldn't feel, I guess, down about yourself or anything like that, because you've earned the right to be there, and you should be positive about it, really.
That must be a pretty intense feeling as well, knowing that you're there against the best in the world. I mean, how did that feel when you'd arrived and taking and lining up and getting into the water ahead of the start. It must be pretty surreal. You almost want to pinch yourself and go, how did I
literally
end up here?
Yeah, literally. It was sort of treading water on the start line. We were a little bit delayed last year, the women's race. And it was like, you're looking around thinking, come on, now this is it. This is the world champs. This is Kona. This is why you're there and you've earned the right to be there. So now's the time to show it, really, I guess, is what you've got to think to yourself. It's exciting. You can't not be nervous or what have you. It's part of it. It's mad.
Tell me a little bit about your race last year. Talk me through how it went.
I had a good swim. Came out, second in my age group coming out of the swim. Probably swam a bit too hard, maybe. I got excited and went for it, really. It was pretty choppy. Worst thing for us was going through all the slower age group men on the turnaround point, because it just got into carnage there. Exited the water, heart was racing, flew out on the bike, and I was like, stomach didn't feel right. I probably went too hard the first half an hour or so on the bike, probably ingested a bit too much salt water, and tried getting some nutrition in me, and it came straight back up again. And then for the preceding sort of 112 miles on the bike, couldn't keep any nutrition down. I was struggling, really. I think it was a combination of everything, really, the heat, the going too hard too soon, salt water, etc. Just getting too excited, I guess, with the situation. Proceeded to go backwards from about then on, really, mile 80, when the wheels came off. It was a long walk.
don't even talk about long walks. I did Ironman South Africa this year with a back injury, and I did no run training in the build-up to it, and I walked the entire marathon. So I know all about long walks. Don't worry about that.
Absolutely.
It's not fun, no.
No.
it sounds fun, walking a marathon. No, there's nothing fun about it. Right, was it frustrating knowing that the work you had put in to qualify and then to get to Kona, what was it frustrating not getting the result you wanted on race day?
Absolutely, but then again, you turn it over and say you had a bad race. Everyone has a bad race. No one has a perfect race all the time. You've got to draw the motivation from that race. You've had a bad race, right? What are you going to do to put it right? Get back out there next year and have the race that you know you're capable of. Was my thoughts really on the whole thing.
Does that fire you up even more now, knowing what happened last year? It wasn't a case of you were just up the road at Bolton and we can go back easily. It's a long way to go to Kona, and you've got a point to prove. You're going back there on a mission this year.
Absolutely. I was sort of sat in that award ceremony watching everything going on. I was like, right, I've got to get back out there next year. I've got to do myself justice, really.
So what's the goal? What's the goal for 2016?
Oh, goodness me. Obviously, now I've got my qualification in the bank. Try and remain injury free and have a good build up to Kona, really, and try and have a race I know I can be proud of, really, out there. That's the goal. See where that lands me, I guess.
Are you feeling the pressure?
No. Pressure's a funny thing. I think it's because I'm internally driven, and it's only pressure on myself, and I know I can't have a worse race than last year, put it that way.
That's the upside. How does your parents and your husband feel about your triathlon exploits? They must be pretty proud of what you've achieved.
Yeah, I think my husband's pretty proud. He sometimes complains about my the situation, but then doesn't everyone a little bit? But I'm sure he's very proud. Although I think he was a bit annoyed about my performance in Kona last year. I had that disappointed look when I was walking. It was not good. But no, the parents, I think they're proud on their own. They don't really understand triathlon. They think I'm a bit mad. Dad would prefer me still be playing rugby, perhaps. But no, I think deep down they are proud. Yeah.
Do you miss the rugby? I mean, you mentioned you were a bit disillusioned, so sort of gave it up. Do you miss it?
I don't miss getting beaten up anymore, to be fair, put it that way. You move on, don't you? Life moves on. You move on to different things. I see some of my friends that are still playing rugby for England now and they've done some amazing efforts. The England women's rugby team have been outstanding. But it's exciting sort of what I'm doing as well. So.
What level did you play at, Rachel?
I played England age groups, up to that sort of England standard. So, okay.
I had a chat with Joe Coombe She played for Wales, and I asked her this question. I'm going to ask you the same question. What's harder, 80 minutes of sort of international level rugby or an Ironman? What's physically harder?
An Ironman, definitely. Yeah.
Even with then,
I could say a week sheep shearing is even harder that way.
I love it. Rachel, it's been great catching up. I look forward to sort of delving into the individual disciplines and finding what you've done to get better. But yeah, I love sharing your story. I think it's going to inspire a lot of people because many, many people look at age groupers and they go, I could never do that because I work hard and I work erratic hours. But you've gone and broken. Yeah, that's exactly it. You've broken the mold and proved that it is possible doing something very different and out there. And yeah, I think your story is incredible.
Well, thanks, Brian. Been good to talk to you too.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of The Kona Edge. Don't forget to connect with us on social media. Simply search for The Kona Edge.